Well, the BizNews briefing is now into its third, nearly at the end of its third week. And one of the great things about this is I've been able to reconnect with old friends from, sure, that radio show that ended a dozen years ago. And one of them is Walter Aylett, who is one of South Africa's top fund managers. He, some time back, started his own group called Aylett & Co., and it's gone from strength to strength. We'll get Walter's insights today on how he's reading the markets. Walter, good to be talking with you. I'm so delighted to see that your son, Kimon, is in the business as well. And I know that because I recently read his book on Warren Buffett. So you're clearly instilling the right kind of principles into not just your family, but anyone who's around you.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting while you were doing that introduction. Yesterday, it was 19 years that we started managing money for Aylett & Co. to the day. And after 19 years with zero assets under management from the beginning, we now, as I say, we think in dollars. We're over $1 billion now, which is, and it's all because of time, and time flies. But I don't think that in the investment world, that they don't give time enough attention as a valuable tool in investments. It really makes the difference.
And I guess that comes from your own grounding, your own founding. Just, we're going to talk about the markets, but I'd love people who don't know you just to get a little bit more of a sense of where you come from. We met, sure, many years ago, and I think it was in the days of Seyfried's asset management.
Yeah, it was 1995, and we started speaking on the radio. And I worked as an analyst with Tim Alsop. And then 4 years later, I went to Coronation in the early founding years. So I was the first external appointment. I was there for 8 years, and then I decided to go on my own in 2005. And it's been a wonderful experience. The rewards have been different to what I expected. I thought I was going to do my own thing, but the real reward is working with the greatest people in the business. I have been very fortunate to work with very, very good people that have been with me from day one. And with the exception of one individual, and now 16 of us, only one was recruited through an agency. The rest came to us and said, I want to work with you. And I think there's something in that. There's something in that. Longevity, you know, choosing the right people. I think Kimon's book is about that.
Yeah, there's so much in Kimon's book that I could see was your values coming through there. Yeah. And of course, the values of Warren Buffett and Charlie Munger as well. And sure, you couldn't ask for a better North Star than those two people. But Walter, if you were giving advice now to would-be entrepreneurial asset managers or guys who'd like to leave the big corporates and go off and do their own thing, would you recommend anything that they think about first before doing so?
You know, last night we had a recruitment dinner for students from UCT at Stellenbosch. Very, very successful. And the talent out there is incredible. And that question keeps on coming up. You know, how do I do what you do? And I think it's a lot harder because the market has shrunk a lot. You know, I'm going to a reunion at the end of the year of all the old timers, you know, of 20, 30 years. And there's none of them are left. There's a few of us. And so it's a very difficult market to start on your own. I think my advice is to find someone that, I think Buffett actually says that, you know, look at for people that you admire and join them and hang on to those coattails. And in a sense, I did that with Tim. You know, Tim was really good. I spent 4 years with him and he taught me the game. John Bickard was very close to Tim. And I think that's the secret is to find someone that you can look up to and then jump on their coattails and hang on for dear life and you'll go far. Work hard and love what you do and all those wonderful principles. But the truth is you need a little bit of luck as well. And don't give up. Don't give up on your dream.
And that's not just for managing people's money, but pretty much anywhere in life.
It's everything. I mean, look at what you've done. It's the same thing, you know. And I'm not telling you anything I know. It's just many people speak like this. And work, do the Charlie thing. Invert, work out what you shouldn't do. And then that behavior you leave to the side. The one thing that for me stands out by far is everyone talks about integrity, but it's more than just ethics. It's you as an individual and how you behave. And it's very tough to do that. Very, very tough to stay true to your North Star, as you call it. Clear the windscreen every year and reset the compass. That's very hard.
Integrity is interesting, and it occurred to me recently when reading about it from Buffett, and it might have even been in Kimon's book, that it's not what many people think, just honesty, but actually it's honesty, trustworthiness, and reliability. And I see so much unreliability. People saying, I'll phone you back, and you never hear from them again, kind of thing.
And you've hit the nail on the head. There are those four, you know, Charlie was asked how to be successful. And the fourth one was be unreliable, and I assure you will be unsuccessful. And there's just so much of it around, and resentment and envy and all the wrong things. And so you're absolutely right. Be reliable. Show up. You've got to show up. You stop complaining or shut up, but get up there and put your head up and go and do it, and it will happen. It happens in business. It happens in sports clubs. It happens in, I mean, our rugby team is a good example.
Integrity. It's a cornerstone of what life should be, but some people don't even understand what it means. But moving on.
Yeah, that's right.
And on at the BizNews Investment Conference, and we're going to get you to one of those soon, I hope, Gesai Jacobs was saying that...
If you ask us to pay, we won't come.
No. Seriously, I mean, that drives me mad.
I love talking and I love educating and helping, but when people ask me to pay to go tell my story, I don't get that.
Yeah, no.
Okay.
I can assure you that doesn't happen with us. But getting back to the BizNews conference, Si Jacobs, and yeah, I don't think Si would pay for anything like that either. He was saying his big short is Tesla. And now Tesla's results have just come out, and they are, I know you've just got back from overseas, so and I don't even know if you follow the company at all, but he reckons that this thing is way overpriced, overvalued. There's going to be a lot of interest from South African investors in Tesla, not just because Elon Musk comes from this country, but do you have a view on it overall?
Not specifically. I mean, we do have a view on Tesla, and particularly, you know, demand for electricity and energy, and that we have a very, very keen interest in that environment. But I think what Si is probably highlighting more than just Tesla is money has no value at the moment, and it hasn't had any value for probably since, I think, when long-term capital started, when Greenspan came and just flooded the market. And the central bank governors, in my opinion, have been hijacked by the politicians all over the world. And at the moment, we have a generation of investors, the unreliable ones, that are used to easy, easy money. And I mean, I can show you 8 or 9 companies like Tesla that certainly don't warrant their valuation. So we as long-term investors are being tested. It reminds me of the old days of 99. The value investors really struggled. If you remember, Orbis and Alan Gray were down. They really suffered, and look how they came back. And I think Si's correct in that respect. There's just too much hot money flying. And it's a generational thing. But I think how long it takes to unwind, I don't know. It's very hard. We've run a global fund for 3 years now. We don't own tech stocks. We look a bit stupid, but that's fine. It's people's money that we're looking after. And if they fire us for being conservative, but so be it. And I think shorting is another thing. You know, we don't short as a house. And our two colleagues that were allowed to short in their own name, because we don't allow staff to invest either in their own name. They have to invest in the funds. But I gave them permission to short Tesla, and they got killed. And they were never short again, you know, and in there lies the lesson. And so Si could be right, but we could all go past being right until we get proven wrong.
Yeah.
He's right. He's definitely right.
What was that story about you can, the market can stay irrational for longer than you can stay alive.
That's right. There was Lord Keynes that said it. It was his saying.
Okay, well, the other big story of the moment is in China, where there's been massive stimulus and a big uplift in the share price, 25% roughly in 2 weeks. Have you been paying attention to that story?
Yes, not so much the Chinese government, what it's done, but we've been buying all the way down for the last 2 to 3 years, particularly casino stocks. We were quite big in China many, many years ago. 15% of our portfolios were in Hong Kong stocks and commodity-related stocks. And I think when the premier got re-elected for the second term, we did not like the noise that came out of there in terms of, I don't think it was very investor-friendly. So we really only had a very small exposure to Macau on the casino stocks. But then it just got ridiculous. Everyone was just selling these Chinese stocks. And it was very hard to keep on buying all the way down. And so we've been very pleased by the performance at the moment. But I think that's all about stimulus and not really about earnings. And ultimately, it's the earnings that have to come through. I think China is going through a very, very difficult time, much more difficult than anyone says. And it's not, it's easy to understand. You know, I think when they got into the WTO in 2002, we said it'll take 20 years for this boom to come to an end. And they achieved their goal of moving 20 million people to the cities every year. That's now come. And now we're seeing the problem. And they have to go through tough medicine to sort themselves out. I don't know how it plays out, but what I do know is when I see a cheap asset, I have to buy it. And I think the casino stocks were just simply too cheap. We're up about 45% in 2 weeks on those stocks. It's all stimulus and nothing else. They can go back 30, 40%. But I think long-term, you'll do very well out of those type of investments.
If I was
an emerging market investor, I would be loading up on China for last year.
And now, even after the little run?
I think it's very dangerous to talk about countries, you know, because we're not experts on everything in any country other than maybe South Africa. So when you talk to me about China, I can talk about 3 or 4 in businesses there. I like the government being on my side in China, and I think the casino stocks are highly regulated. I know exactly where I stand. There are only 6 players there. The figures come out every month. It's all about cash flow. So I'd rather play China that way. And if you tell me about something in China, I'll go look at it. But I can't make a call on it. But my gut tells me over the next 20 years, you want to be in China. It's a long
Coming time. Back home, over the next 20 years, do you want to be in Capitec?
You know, what a great company. And it's, you know, you talk about mistakes. It's really errors of omission that kill us fund managers. Not so the bad ones are errors of commission, and we don't really commit to those. But there's a wonderful, wonderful story of a great business. You know, I met the CFO of Bank of America, who is a South African. I went to see him in New York, and all he could do was ask me about Capitec, and that was about 5 years ago. And the respect that it commanded for him. And I think it's a good example that even in your own back garden, you can find a brilliant investment. And they've got no legacy that the big banks have. And the danger is that they will create a legacy. We've seen in the life assurance businesses with Discovery, where their competitors had a lot of legacies. But I can't say anything bad about Capitec other than it's in the price, you know. And I'm not, I think it's easier to, you know, to buy some other stocks. Like, for example, we're very big and we buy cars. I think that could be the next Capitec in this country. The only thing that's going to hold back we buy cars is that we don't buy cars. In other words, it's a 500,000 car market per year, brand new car market, and that the consumer doesn't get richer. But, you know, there are these successes, and I think Capitec's one of them. It's a great company, great experience, easy to understand.
I'm curious about We Buy Cars. I know the players there quite well. In fact, Farn and Dirk are going to be presenting at our BizNews conference next year as an example of entrepreneurship. But for you to give them the thumbs up is quite applauded. What is it about them that excites you?
Well, we stumbled onto it by chance. We were very big in transaction capital, and we did really, really well. We bought it when Mr. Lamberti left it, and we rode all the way up to 50 Rand. And one of the investment transaction capital was We Buy Cars. Unfortunately for us, they were a leveraged business, and SA Taxi was one of the other businesses in transaction capital. I mean, you know the story there. We should have probably lightened. And it's always this debate, do you sell your roses or do you pull the roses out and leave the weeds behind? We got to understand We Buy Cars, and we spent a lot of time with them, probably 2 years before we invested, when they were unlisted. And, it was at a time when South Africa was probably at its real low, and the listing was forced upon them. I don't think they wanted to list at that time, as transaction capital. So we bought as much as we could. I think we own more than 5% of We Buy Cars today. It was just ridiculously cheap, and we could not get enough. And we're not that big in terms of the other asset managers, but we did pretty well in getting our stock that we wanted. And we thought 23 Rand was the right price to buy it, and we got offered at 18.75. That was a very, very good price. And then I think, looking forward, it's just if they can achieve what I think they want to achieve, which is to try to get us to sell our cars more than once a year, it's a total different business. It's not a distributor or a dealership. It's, can you imagine going every year just changing a car? I just sold a car to them now. It was the most awesome experience. And I tried their competitors. It was abysmal. I am speaking to my book, I guess, but I did try and sell through their competitors, and it was terrible. Whereas the professionalism is there, and the ease. And I think, there are always going to be difficulties and challenges in that industry. Buying a car that's 7 or 8 years old from them will come with problems, and there's always reputational risk that we think about. And, they will be the player in the market, and they will attract negative attention as well. So we've got to be careful there.
There were a couple of other little companies that reported in the past week. Sorry, I said earlier, Capitec didn't report today. Of course, it reported earlier in the week. York Timbers, Lesaka. I don't know if either of those rings any bells with you, but are you looking at that small and medium company area in South Africa, which Piet Viljoen has been telling us for a while now is very, very cheap?
Well, Piet's very right on that. We are very much in the mid-cap market, but that's not to say we don't look at small caps, particularly for some of our very small funds. I like small caps, and I own a few. The packaging companies are a good example. They're ridiculously cheap. When you buy an owner-managed driven business that's on a multiple of 5, they're buying back their shares at the right price. They're doing very smart acquisitions. It's just be patient and just let the management work for you. And you'll be amazed. We own 2 shares, Transpaco and Bola Medcalf, and we've been shareholders there for 19 years now. And look, it's a tough industry, but will the PE ever be re-rated? I don't know. I don't really care. I care about them returning cash to me or spending it wisely, and they do that rationally. And it was very interesting. I think with the small caps, the risk is you get into a value trap. So an interesting one is Caxton. Is that a value trap? How do you, because it's ridiculously cheap and anyone can do the numbers, but how do you unlock the value there? I don't know. And there are a few like that. And so unless you go hostile, which they'll have to do in York or something like that, which I don't like doing. I think you've got to have management on your side. And you need permanent capital as well.
Walter, it's been fascinating talking with you. Look forward to the next time. Walter Aylett is the founder of Aylett & Co. I'm Alec Hogg from biznews.com.